mackerel. You know, this guy, you know, is connected to the P2 and Licio Gelli and that whole group, and up through the Medellin cartel up to Donald Reagan, chief of staff of the White House then. And Hitler is, and it was just right after that that they said Hitler was, which is interesting because they've locked up Leder Ravis, and maybe they'll never have a quote again, and they officially say, maybe officially buried him and said, oh, he died a month ago. You know, they're, among them, there's a keyword. All you have to do is put it on any broadcasting station where they're in the know, because the native population don't even wake up and say, wait a minute.
A real peril of the Mengele, too.
Yeah. Situation. Oh, exactly. But when the San Jose Mercury ran a thing about the teeth, there isn't one group or Anti-Defamation League or Wiesenthal that says, well, whose teeth were they?
Right.
And yet Zundel, who's a very pro-Nazi and sells the marching songs and the uniforms and everything, he tells you it was Bartholomew, the cook, that was killed. And so that there's a continuity of these people through the years connecting to each other, putting things on maps, saying it in the media, and then the native population, oink, oink, you know, tell me more, you know, who won the 49ers or what's going on, you know, and they're sleeping, and even the people like the rabbis are not concerned at all.
Well, you're making these connections, May. We hear in the news today of Rudolph, having gone home to Germany, is exonerated. His daughter says, oh, it's good. They found out they were all untruth.
Well, who exonerated?
Right.
The Germans.
Yes.
Oh, well.
Achtung.
So, yeah.
This is such important work. It's just amazing.
And Mr. Hess is safe in his cell again. He didn't die of pneumonia. We have to live through him a few more years.
If Hitler was alive or just recently died, wouldn't he be really old, like over 100?
Well, if you ever watch the Today Show, do you ever see Willard Scott in the morning from 7 to 9?
Yeah.
No. Well, watch it. He always has birthday pictures and cards for people 100 or older.
Oh, I know. I know. I've had.
I mean, that's the worst fallacy, that because you would be 100, he wouldn't be 100. He'd be 98.
Well, as you pointed out, he did take care of himself. He was a vegetarian.
He was a vegetarian. He didn't smoke, and everybody probably carried him in cotton. No, I mean, that is not a reason to say he didn't have his rockers. There were people like Bertrand Russell or George Bernard Shaw. There's a lot of old people that live to be 100 that have their rock. Not a lot,
well,
but enough.
He'd be 100 in 1989.
He'd be 98 right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On April 20th.
Yeah.
So in case anybody wants to celebrate A. Hitler's birthday.
Well, plenty do, Tom. They have parties every year.
Coming up in a month and 2 days.
No, you have to wait a month.
It's not long.
Don't bake your cake yet.
Yeah, let's... Maybe see about burying Hitler.
Well, but you talked to somebody that went to a birthday party of Hitler.
No, no. What happened? Oh, I talked to somebody who lived in Brazil, in São Paulo, who at the time of Hitler's birthday party, where he was with that Wagner, you know, the Nazi, was running the Volkswagen, and this is where Tommaso Busetta came from, the great pizza trial, that connection down in São Paulo. But at the party celebrating his birthday, somebody came in with a camera and got a nest of Nazis, and Wagner put himself in the police department to be protected by the San Paulo police, and Adolf Hitler was photographed putting his hands over his face, and the headlines in Rio de Janeiro newspapers in Brazil, and you can look them up, the April 23rd, and I have the dates of it, the year, I forget it right now, said Hitler's birthday party, that he was present. This was down in Brazil. They knew it.
Uh-huh.
And the reason this came out was that I was talking about Hitler being alive based on my research, and my mother always thought that was the funniest thing she ever heard of, besides the fact that Sirhan wasn't the only gunman and ambassador. She would get hysterical. And then as she got older in life and couldn't move around so much, she had a companion, and the companion come from Honduras and then moved to Brazil, married a German, lived in Brazil. And one day something was on the news, and she said to mother that Hitler was alive, that she was down there, and they knew it. And my mother just about fell off her chair at that point and said, oh, my goodness, you know, May says this. And she was telling me that the newspapers down there were filled with it.
Right.
Her name is Mrs. Kellenberger. She married a man who lives in Ohio. But she said that's what was in the Rio papers, and she gave me the name of the papers to send for. I really should send for them, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To sort of put some of this together, one of the books that we still have on the list is Hitler's Secret Life, and this is still available in paperback. And it tells about the little river near in part of Berlin, near the Chancellery Building, on which they landed a seaplane, and it was really possible at that time, April 30th, about the end of the Reich, for Hitler to have escaped from the Chancellery Building down to this river, gotten on the seaplane, and been flown out. Now, a lot of people conjectured that what happened was just that, and he was flown to Norway with his group, and there they took these submarines down south. Now, we have all these little bits and pieces of information that we've just been talking about.
Right.
And to put them together, it seems that Hitler could very well have escaped from Berlin.
I don't have that book.
At that time.
I have to get one.
Gotten on. This is by Glenn Ingram.
Okay.
Ingram, and gotten on this sort of a seaplane, gone up to Norway, gotten on the submarine, gone to Antarctica or South America.
Well,
and we have all this other information. We talked about all of these sightings in South America. The funny business about the U-boats appearing a month after the war off Argentina.
Right.
And the fact that this Hannah Reich flew down there, and I think she possibly could have been the pilot, you know?
Well, Hans Ulrich Rudel and Hannah Reich were in the bunker with Martin Bormann and Hitler up to the hour when they parted.
That's right.
And she was kept in jail, did you know that, for 1 year on charges that she flew Hitler out of there. Did you know that
she
had been arrested for 1 year, and then they released her as a suspect for having flown him away?
And the fact, there's that, and then the fact that the bodies, we can show that they were not Eva Braun and were not Hitler.
Yeah.
And so where are the bodies?
And also Rudel, the head of the Luftwaffe, who was flying 2 years with Hannah, with all their personal possessions out of the country, he was the money man down in San Paulo, the connection of Germany to Mengele.
Yeah, and we know that Mengele was down there. We know that Mueller was down there. We know that Bormann was and is down there. And so you put all of these together, and you make, I think, a very good circumstantial case that Hitler and Eva and his girlfriend got out of Germany.
Now, this book you have here, this Aftermath by Farrago, do you remember the name of the man in Argentina that all the Nazis had to contact to see Klaus Barbie or Mengele? Do you remember his name? It was Mr. Von Oven.
Von Oven.
He was Goebbels' secretary. Yeah, Mr. Von Oven. That's my friend Brian Boland. He had talked to Mengele and Barbie, and he told me about Von Oven, and his name is in the book Aftermath, and he was Goebbels' private secretary who moved down to Argentina in order to see Barbie or Mengele in Bolivia or Brazil or Argentina, wherever they moved. You had to contact Mr. Von Oven, and he checked your bona fides.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We were talking earlier about the infiltration of the left by, elements of the intelligence establishment. We can see that in the, women's movement, black movement, so on. And one thing I want to throw out, if you don't know anything about it, we'll just go on to the next thing. But here in the Silicon Valley, there's this supposed peace group called Beyond War. Have you looked into them at all?
Yeah.
There's a few things which I could delineate which make me real suspicious about them. Generally, their sudden vast success, they're an amazingly successful group. They have a yearly budget of over $3 million.
They originally called Creative Initiative. What was she saying?
Creative Initiative was a sort of one of these vague New Age kind of things.
Well,
and there's really no direct relationship between the two groups. It they started with some of the same members. That's all.
Okay.
But
this
group just kind of jumped out of nowhere. They have how many? Yeah, and they have like 500 full-time employees. I mean, people that do nothing but work for Beyond War.
They work with New Forum down in Monterey, too.
Do you know
the group New Forum?
New Forum?
They work with New Forum down in L.A. They have once a month a luncheon at Pebble Beach where they talk with the peacemakers.
Yeah.
You know that group? They're linked
to
Beyond War. Yeah, go on, describe that. You think it's a cover for a larger...
Yeah, because... With this tremendous budget and with the millions of dollars of computer equipment they have and so on, they don't really do anything. You know, like a group like San Jose Peace Center with a just a minuscule budget in comparison, you know, maybe a couple thousand a year, do show up at all the protests. They do a lot of actions and so on. And Beyond War doesn't go to protests. They don't do protests. In fact, they attack the groups that do. They say they're too militant.
Well, the head of the activism group, the Peace Marching Santa Monterey Peninsula, is a woman named Jackie Smith, who is part of the New Forum group. And she walked from California to Washington for the movement, the peace movement. Her husband, I believe, is at Navy postgraduate school. There are a lot of people from military who don't want war, but they don't fight apartheid. They don't fight death squads in Guatemala. They don't fight people's being decapitated or bayoneted in Nicaragua. They're not trying to get rapid transportation for people in this country, improve their transportation, or low-cost housing. There's a difference between wanting to save a nuclear bomb on your own head as against fighting fascism. And they're far from fighting fascism. And as I say, instead of having a boxed lunch, they go to Pebble Beach, of all places, and have a very fancy lunch and a delicious... I've been to a couple of them. I went to Daniel Ellsberg there. But when I got up, Mr. Bauman, who is fighting Star Wars, spoke there. And then when I got up, you could ask a few questions and said, no. You worked so much in the Pentagon. Did you ever meet Fritz Kramer? Then the host arranging at the top table there at Pebble Beach said, now, we're not going to have any lectures from you, May, and shut me up. If you want to stop weapons, and you know a man's in control, why can't you ask someone from the Pentagon? And I just should have said right then, oh, go to hell, you're a bunch of phonies, That's what I really should say, who's kidding who, But the Beyond War is a very slick, well-paid, and nobody can fight Beyond War, but there's a very catchy thing here. A lot of people think the war will be over once we win against Russia. What they want is have peace, but peace without Russia. So that they're projecting what will happen after the Russians lose. Beyond War doesn't care that the Pentagon revealed 2 weeks ago that they're making the weapons for World War IV because the three is already planned.
That's a good point. So they're really just another version of the Cold Warriors who see this Soviet
Beyond
Union.
Beyond War is after we get rid of our enemy.
Right.
Exactly.
And SU is really a reflection of U.S., just like it.
The base component of Beyond War is in the defense industry of Silicon Valley, and they appear to have quite a few military people that belong to it. According to a article by Susan Faludi in West Magazine. West Magazine, one of those inserts for the San Jose Mercury. An article called A Separate Peace. Two of the founding members of Beyond War are former CIA employees, and it wasn't like they said, oh, we were all wrong before. They were proud of working for the CIA, and in all ways the founding people in Beyond War, I'm not saying the people that just go to the meetings and such, but the top level is very supportive of the military and says it's necessary and so on.
Beyond War, after we do our military work, then we will be beyond war. They'll be wiped out, and then we won't need war.
Yeah.
We'll control all the other countries as third world countries,
The world dominance is the
only thing. Tom Brought, we talk about these world problems, and they're all around us. Tom Brought covers from some current books. Just the cover and the author, people would get an idea of how much is going on.
Good, man.
Why don't you just read the title and the author to get the overtone of what's coming out now that people can read that relates to what we call fascism. Currently is in,
Good talk. We just ran through a few of the titles.
Good overview just of these things.
Everything from Power on Earth, Tragedy and Hope.
And then people may want to call in and want to know about one in particular.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Now, Tom, you've done
Tom.
Arranging what are a good 50 or 60 covers.
Well, the trouble is, best thing to do would be to go through my catalog. I have...
But you pulled these out.
Huh? I pulled them out in case I forgot what they were about.
It's a pretty colorful.
And I only say that because there are about 600 titles on my catalog, and I really I'm deficient in that respect. I immediately cannot recall.
But these are easy. They're
what they're all about.
We could do an overview, though. You've done a good job of summarizing how.
You don't have to do it. They're about. Here they are. There they are.
Yeah, but they go from soup to nuts.
That's what I mean. People would get an idea. It's like a cafeteria.
One of the things that people should really realize is about the American military-industrial complex, and there have been quite a few books that deal more or less with that.
Right.
Some deal with the specific corporations like General Dynamics.
GDITT and...
There's a book on RCA. You might think about that being totally just broadcasting with NBC and electronics and refrigerators and so on, but they're a big defense contractor.
And they merged with General Electric.
General Electric.
The nuclear operation in the South Bay.
Now, we don't have any current book on General Electric. We do have the one on RCA. There's a book on General Dynamics.
Mm-hmm. To give
there's
the overview
on IBM. There's a book on IBM currently so that's one point about the people in the military industrial complex, so called. Then to go back to the Nazis, people just, I still don't think they realize the extent of the influence of the Nazi money and the Nazi industries after World War II, and that's why we bring the book up, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile.
Right.
Because this describes how Martin Bormann and the so-called successors to the Third Reich took tremendous amounts of money out of the Third Reich and moved it to various banks. They moved some of the money to Argentina and other South American countries. They moved money to Spain. They moved money to Turkey. They had money and personnel in Egypt. It just went all over.
Another book you have that's very good on that is The Last Hero about William Donovan, because that tells just towards the end of the book, the 600 corporations that were set up, and it parallels the Bormann book, how they set the network through businesses throughout the world.
It corroborates what's said in Martin Bormann by Paul Manning in The Last Hero. Now, the book is basically about William Donovan setting up the OSS, but you never know where you're going to find this corroborating evidence. And
We have a phone call, right?
Yes, my name is Phil Johnston, and I live in Santa Cruz, and I have in the past been associated with Beyond War, and actually I hope to continue so in the future. And I wanted to comment on something I heard Mabe Russell say, that frankly, from my dealings with Beyond War, has led me to believe that what she said was a gross misrepresentation of what Beyond War is all about, and that namely is the idea that Beyond War, and absolutely, almost entirely the opposite of, because a big thrust of the concept is the elimination of an us versus them mentality, and it's mainly a grassroots organization that's aimed at changing people's viewpoint. It's not geared towards changing things from the top down. It's geared from changing things from the bottom up, giving people a personal transformation within and disseminating that to other people.
Yeah, well, let me just say one thing on that. Changing it from the bottom up is like, if you heard my view on that, I don't know if you heard my programs on World Watchers, that in the last 3 months, the National Security Council and the Defense Department have set up a team, which they do every few 5 or 10 years. This team of Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Fred Eakley, and so forth. And they make the policies, this Mr. Richard Perle, who the Prince of Darkness, who is, in quotes, retired so he can be more active, They make the policies for the next 20 years, no matter which president is in. They tell them what we have to do, just as when John Kennedy was elected, they said you have to invade Cuba because that was decided by Richard Nixon and Eisenhower before you came here, it's ready to go. Now, these people are making, because no matter what happens to Ronald Reagan, and this was a big article in New York Times, the policy will stay the same, no matter which president, whether it's Gary Hart or whoever. And the point about these institutions or organizations is that no matter what the grassroots do, the anti-war people in California signed 1 million signatures to stop the nuclear testing or stopping the nuclear bombs, but a handful of people with these international connections make the decisions, so the organization can take thousands or millions of well-meaning people, but the weapon contracts, I read 10 or more papers a day, the weapon contracts go on. Like yesterday, they said if we need 2 destroyers, that's $8 billion or $9 billion, $4.5 billion each. Right. So you can all meet and have your lunches and have your organizations, but the contracts and the intention for the war is there. And the people are not addressing the fact of where the weapons are going. Just read every day, like these World War IV weapons. I just had a thing on the air last Monday that the Pentagon has decided that they are building viruses to immunize only 3 million people in the event of a biological warfare, that the military and the National Guard are the only ones saved. We don't have the money. But the same day, they say we want $4 billion for another ship.
Okay. And,
but
I
the point is, yeah, let me just finish by saying that the grassroots, like yourselves, may be perfectly decent, honest people. I took a bus last April, and I'm going to do it again April, to San Francisco for these peace movements. But on my bus were all the peacenik Beyond War people from the Monterey Peninsula. And when I had a paper stand out in San Francisco or gave them on the bus about Fritz Kramer and possibly being Hitler's top general making decisions in the Pentagon, I was treated like I had leprosy and syphilis. They were very angry. And I know these people. I've met the generals in the Beyond War thing. They get very angry at people like me who say, who is running the war thing? The organizing is fine. But masses are not going to stop war unless you extract these cancers out of your society. So you may be well-meaning and you may have a concept of grassroots people who do not want war with Russia. But the reason I suspect these groups is their absolute refusal simultaneously to address themselves to the people who have decided that war is a fait accompli.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Beyond War basically, well, fairly acknowledges, one, that war is an obsolete way of solving problems, as if it hasn't always been, perhaps. And also that the government, the governments of the world and the people who make these high-level decisions will obviously disregard whatever the people have in their better interest. You know, if they want to wage war, they'll wage war even if it breaks the law. They're fully aware of that. And the idea of signing petitions and trying to affect a law along those lines, they see that also as being just another way of trying to change it from the top down. What they're talking about, I guess, is more of a spiritual, metaphysical transformation as much as a political one.
Well, I'll tell you something. If you read your daily papers and your Wall Street Journal and your Washington Post, the New York Times, the London Times, you can have a spiritual change, but they... Look, I don't say it isn't helpful to us to feel that our spirituality is connective, but they look at us like animals in a fence, and we have to look at them as manipulators. It's like Gates of the CIA saying in his documents, we have to invade Libya because we want to reshape the map of Africa. We know Gaddafi isn't a terrorist, but we want to reshape the map. Well, the people in Africa have no choice. They can sit in spirituality, every single one of them united, which they won't do. But the powers that be look at the globe as things that you collect. That's their hobby, to collect countries. And the people are not important. Jean Kirkpatrick writes an article that there's 10 minerals we need in Africa, and therefore There's nothing in Africa that matters except us using 10 minerals. And our policies are made on that, mm-hmm. not on the idea that war is obsolete. For them, war is an economic necessity, and it's an ego trip. Power is its own seductive opiate for those people. Power and the economic manipulation of the world. It's geared to war, and they don't want to give that up.
Mm-hmm. So we are talking about reality, caller, and the basic question I suspect many other listeners have, too, that you should address is what really is Beyond War doing, or it's like the Est Hunger Project. It all sounds very good, but the bottom line is, you know, we're still seeing the reality, and how does putting forth the proposition in the way that you're doing really change that concrete reality?
Beyond War says they want to eliminate war, but they refuse to attack the defense establishment in its present form. How are we going to get to a world beyond war if in the future if we don't start eliminating war in the present? And Beyond War absolutely refuses to take any stand on things like on interventions like in Central America, on the defense industry. In fact, the leaders of Beyond War are in the defense industry. The whole Beyond War's whole center of funds is right here in Silicon Valley in the defense industry. Everyone I've met in Beyond War has been something to do with high tech or computers. I haven't met anyone yet in Beyond War that was a carpenter or a cook or something.
They're decidedly
technological.
They're decidedly apolitical. They don't want to get involved.
Well, then you can't do it.
Politics of who's right and who's wrong.
Well, you can't solve these things. It's like when Ronald Reagan says, "I want to invade Libya." The minute you attack Gaddafi, or if he had killed Gaddafi, it might have set off a whole Middle East World War III Armageddon chronology, because the Arabs said, "If you touch him, we'll all go along with him." And they don't address themselves, or Israel say, "We arm Iran and Iraq because we like to see them fight each other." Well, Beyond War, what? The world war? What about the little wars? They don't want to be political, and you have to be suspicious of people who don't want to stop the killing, period. Who don't want... Little wars are as serious as big wars.
Absolutely.
And we got terrorists. Now, here's a perspective, Carr. Speaking of Reagan's invasion of Libya, and another caller called in to quote, we got terrorists, a very strong case can be made on the basis of the overwhelming evidence that has been cited by May and Tom here that we have in the White House leading this country not only the world's major terrorist, gun runner, and drug smuggler, but a man who, for all his likable personal qualities, represents on behalf of the American people the very force of evil that he's so vociferous in denouncing the Soviet Union and others for representing. What
sure.
can we do about this?
How can you be against war?
With that, I've always had extreme trepidation about Reagan from the outset. I would like to say one thing, that I was one of many people around the world who on New Year's Eve joined in meditation for world peace.
Yes.
Well, I'm one who on New Year's Eve continued to find out who was killing the heads of states to wipe out their countries.
Can I finish, please?
What?
May I finish my statement?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
And
what would you choose?
At point, I have noticed on Gorbachev's part anyway, some very encouraging trends. I'm not going to profess to know that much whether Gorbachev can be trusted or not, but at least he's apparently taking some very positive steps.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things that makes peace is blackmailing and nothing else. If they pick up Danilov and the president wants him out, then Gorbachev says, then meet me in Reykjavik. You know, yesterday, because Reagan is so down and out, he had some Russian sailors at the Rose Garden.
Yes.
He never would have done that. He wouldn't be seen dead in 6 years. But then afterwards, they took him to McDonald's for lunch. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, they almost drowned so you could go to McDonald's and have a hamburger. But that's the extent of the hospitality, you know, like we're on. The reason Gorbachev can pull the strings now and say, come back to the arms table, isn't because you meditated, but because Reagan is faltering and they have so much goods on us that he can call the terms now. I think that bullets and blackmail control the world. I believe
actually, I'm looking more at his desire for human rights reforms and stuff like that, which if he continues to do so, that's been a major contention of Reagan's, to not negotiate with the Soviet Union.
Yep.
And if he continues to make these reforms, Reagan's going to continue to look like the dupe that he already is.
Yeah, well, you know, the human rights is just a Cold War story. Look at the World Anti-Communist League and the death squads and Dobison and John Singlaub, who runs those things. We have decimated and worked with Klaus Barbie and Bolivia and the 3As, the death squads, and we have set up that human rights is just a smokescreen. Look at the percentage of black people in prisons in America for nothing. I mean, what do we talk about human rights? They just beat this dead whip over and over. The one mistake Gorbachev is making, that if I were the head of the country, I'd open the door and tell every Jew to leave and end the subject forever. Just let them out. I don't even know why he wants them there.
Yeah.
Well, they need the Jews because the Jews are such a major part of the society. Jews are like something